Hello, welcome to the reading of the second hour of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, March 9th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona. We begin by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: Manuela C. Bowden, Clifford Bowles, Narita Clara Brown, Ronald Martin Carter, Michael Allen Chwastek, Barbara Ann Cropper, Gary Lee Cropper, Stephen Lee Gearhart, Dr. David Greenberg, Foster A. Mattson, Mary Louise McWilliams, Patrick Joseph Neve, Edward Crehan Rapp, Benetta Timken, Tom Tamuka, Barbara Jean Woolbricht. Sun Sounds of Arizona extends its condolences to the families and friends of the individuals listed in today's obituaries. Now we'll turn to the economy section of the paper. Looks like there's three articles, but the big one at the top of the page, written by Russ Wiles for the Arizona Republic: Experts Share Tips for Best Uses of Tax Refunds. This is the time of year when millions of Americans receive their biggest annual financial windfall. It's not a winning lottery ticket or a favorable bet on March Madness, but rather a federal income tax refund, possibly a state refund as well. Nearly 2 in 3 taxpayers got a federal refund for 2023. The average was $3,167. Now, many of these households also are living hand-to-mouth, suggesting that they haven't put refunds from past years to good use. So here are some suggestions for making the most of this financial opportunity. First off, pay off high-interest debt. If there's one recommendation on which advisors nearly universally agree, it is this one. Sam Swift, a certified financial planner and CEO of TCI Wealth Advisors in Tucson, said this: "It is an immediate return on investment by reducing interest cost and improving financial stability, while also providing peace of mind and a sense of relief from financial stress." Now, tackling high-cost debt is imperative, given that credit cards can carry interest charges of 22% or even higher, according to Michael Sullivan, who's a personal finance consultant at Take Charge America, which is a credit counseling and debt management company in Phoenix. Michael said, quote, "Payday loan interest rates or auto title debt can be much higher. These are the first debts to be attacked, with all available funds directed at the highest interest debt." It's not especially difficult to put aside money in an account devoted to meeting unexpected obligations, and yet many Americans have not done it. Saving even modest amounts of money can be difficult. Nearly half of Americans are stressed in this area. According to a February survey by Bankrate.com, it found that 13% of respondents had no such savings at all, while another 33% had some savings, but they had even higher credit card balances. Sullivan considers $1,000 the minimum target for which you should aim. Sullivan said, quote, "If there is less than $1,000, it's not an emergency fund at all, because even one accident or illness with a trip to the emergency room can easily cost more than $1,000. Without adequate savings, emergencies turn into high interest debt," unquote. Stephen Connors of Connors Wealth Management in Scottsdale considers emergency funds to be more important now than in recent years because of all the turmoil and the uncertainty in the economy with the tariffs and ongoing layoffs of federal workers. He suggests, quote, "be more conservative than you would normally be," unquote. Savers should strive to find accounts yielding at least 4%, he said. You can earn that on money market mutual funds and some bank and credit union vehicles, especially if you ask for better deals. Next, put money into a retirement account. Assuming your short-term needs are covered with an emergency fund and you are paring down your credit card debts, you can turn your attention to the longer-term goals. Retirement accounts, such as individual retirement accounts or 401k-style plans, they fit the bill and they provide tax incentives. So with traditional IRAs or 401k plans, you generally can reduce your taxable income by the amount of your contributions. With Roth versions of these accounts, you don't get a front-end benefit, but the money comes out tax-free years later when you withdraw it. Thus, you sacrifice some near-term tax help for benefits down the road. SWIFT considers retirement vehicles, especially Roth accounts, to be good choices for tax refunds if you can afford to fund them. He said, quote, "Even small contributions can grow significantly over time, helping you build wealth tax-free for your future," unquote. So if your employer offers matching funds on contributions to a 401k account, you can stretch your tax refunds even further. SWIFT said, quote, "Always at least contribute up to the amount that your company is matching. It is free money," unquote. So what are some other smart moves to ponder? There are other considerations when it comes to tax refunds. If you get a large amount, Sullivan suggests changing your withholding percentage by filling out a new W-4 form through your Human Resource Department. So why do this? Because refunds represent money that you have essentially loaned interest-free to the Internal Revenue Service and perhaps a state tax agency. So to complete the picture, he suggests taking the dollar amount by which your future paychecks increase through lowered withholding and then depositing that money automatically into a high-interest savings account. It's a move that essentially spreads out your refund, gives it to you earlier, and allows you to earn interest sooner. But the strategy would backfire if you spend rather than save those incremental amounts. Excessive spending is the root of the problem for most anyone with high debts or low savings. Solving this issue requires discipline, which isn't easy. But there are ways to add guardrails, such as delaying certain purchases to wring some emotions out of the decision. If there's something you really want to buy, like new golf clubs, consider a cooling off period of perhaps a week or 10 days. Chances are you will abandon certain purchases. But if you really want to buy something after that time, Connor said, quote, "You will at least know your emotions are less involved," unquote. And that was Russ Weil's article, Experts Share Tips for Best Use of Tax Refunds. Our next article is entitled Wendy's Restaurants Turn to AI for Drive-Through Orders. This is written by Amaris Encinas for the USA Today Network. If you plan on hitting the drive-thru at Wendy's this year, there's a chance an ordering assistant named Fresh AI may take the order. In a February 13th earnings call, CEO Kirk Tanner revealed Wendy's would deploy voice-enabled AI order taking at up to 600 restaurants across the country because the fast food chain really liked the results of the pilot program, which incorporated the technology at about 100 restaurants. Tanner said, quote, "Fresh AI improves the customer experience and enables some labor efficiencies in our restaurants," unquote. Tanner says he puts Fresh to the test between 3 and 4 times a week at a Wendy's in Dublin, Ohio, near the chain's headquarters. Fresh AI gives Wendy customers the opportunity to build their orders and understands what to ask for. Tanner also noted the accuracy of the tool was definitely improving. Wendy's could incorporate Fresh AI to the rest of the system if the accelerated rollout proves successful. Google Cloud is assisting Wendy's with the fresh AI rollout, according to Business Insider. Tanner said, "It's got a bright future, and we're moving forward." Wendy's did not immediately respond to USA Today's request for comment. Wendy's customers are split on how they feel about fresh AI, voicing their opinions and concerns with automation at the drive-thru and at other fast food joints in the Wendy's subreddit. It's an online community on Reddit that's dedicated to sharing information about Wendy's. One user wrote this, "Sad to say this, but AI drive-thru is way better than the real people." But for others, the lack of human interaction was disappointing. Now, Wendy's is hardly the first fast food chain to incorporate AI at the drive-thru window. Last year, McDonald's and Taco Bell both experimented with AI. McDonald's halted the test after customers reported the tool got orders wrong, and Taco Bell implemented the AI voice feature at about 300 restaurants, according to Business Insider. And that was the article, "Wendy's Restaurants Turn to AI for Drive-Thru Orders." Our third article from the economy section of the paper is entitled, "Walmart's Self-Checkouts Frustrating Some Shoppers," written by Mike Snyder for the USA Today. Some Walmart shoppers are grumbling about the retailer's self-checkout lanes, venting their frustrations on X. The benefit of self-checkout is in the eye of the consumer. For every shopper who is upset that there is no self-checkout lane and long lines at registers, there's another one who is upset about having to use self-checkout and sometimes having to wait to do so. One North Carolina shopper posted on February 18th, "Hey, Walmart, how come you don't have any registers open at 8:30 a.m.? Now I gotta check out an entire cart in a very small area. Do better. How about a discount to those who self-check out?" Other complaints involved long lines at registers with no self-checkout at a Walmart in Montgomery, Alabama. That was in a February 11th post. And a lack of an express lane or a cashier when a shopper in Florida had just three items. He posted, "I need to rethink where I shop," unquote. Well, there's a long-running series of posts where folks snidely ask about getting a W-2 from Walmart for using their self-checkout. Decisions related to self-checkout and staffed registers are made at the manager's discretion and are based on several factors, including feedback from associates and customers and shopping patterns and business needs. That's a quote from a Walmart statement. Stores' use of self-checkout increased during COVID-19 pandemic as a way to create space between shoppers and store employees. Since then, most major retailers have experimented with self-checkout lanes. Retailers face a difficult balancing act, said Santiago Gallino, an associate professor of marketing operations, information, and decisions at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. Santiago said, quote, "Too few staffed registers can frustrate customers who prefer traditional checkout, while an over-reliance on self-checkout can introduce inefficiencies and revenue loss," unquote. In recent months, Walmart removed self-checkout at select stores and in some cases made self-checkout open only to Walmart Plus members and drivers of its Spark delivery service. Some stores also began posting customer host at self-checkout lanes. These staffers can show customers to available registers, help them through the checkout process, and answer any questions they may have, according to the company on its website. In the summer of 2023, Costco began asking staffers to crack down on checking membership cards in the self-checkout lines to not only curtail the sharing of cards with non-members, but also to reduce product loss. However, love it or hate it, self-checkout is here to stay in the U.S., with labor cost savings being a key driver, especially in managing peak time demand, Guyano said, quote, retailers can operate with fewer employees while still providing checkout options, helping to balance staffing needs. Beyond cost considerations, self-checkout also caters to consumer preferences for speed and convenience, particularly for smaller purchases, unquote. Now, there is a price paid as well for the loss of the human touch at retail. Guyano said, quote, in grocery settings, self-checkout reduces opportunities for customers to engage with store employees who can provide a friendly interaction, ask about their experience, and enhance overall customer satisfaction, unquote. And that was the article, Walmart's Self-Checkouts Frustrating Some Shoppers. We're coming up on 16 minutes past the hour. Time for us to move on over to the sports section. The cover story for the sports section is all about Suns basketball. It's entitled, Sun Setting on Durant Era in Phoenix? And it was written by Dwayne Rankin for the Arizona Republic. Kevin Durant arrived in Phoenix as the ultimate introductory splash for new Suns team owner Matt Ishbia, who dealt Mikal Bridges, Cam Johnson, Jay Crowder, and four future unprotected first-round picks to Brooklyn for the superstar right before the 2023 trade deadline. He has reached 30,000 career points and remains one of the game's best players. But the Suns have fallen way short of championship expectations with him. Minnesota swept them last year in the first round. Phoenix has a losing record with fewer than 20 games left this season and is in danger of missing the playoffs for the first time since 2019. This isn't how the Suns envisioned the Durant era unfolding, and all signs point to it ending this summer unless this team embarks on an insane postseason run. Durant has 1 year remaining on his four-year $194 million deal that he signed with the Nets. Washington Post national NBA writer Benjamin Golliver said, quote, the Suns need a hard reset around Devin Booker. They have very few assets to work with, and they will find themselves needing to trade Booker down the road if they don't act aggressively to put a more competent rotation around him. It seems clear that the Suns and Kevin Durant would both be better off if they part ways this summer, unquote. Well, sources informed the Arizona Republic that Durant's camp was upset that Phoenix put him in trade talks before the 2025 deadline last month, as he rejected a move back to Golden State, where he won back-to-back NBA titles in the finals MVPs. The Suns could also work towards sliding under the second apron by dealing Grayson Allen or Royce O'Neal. Allen is on a four-year, $70 million extension. O'Neal has a four-year, $42 million deal, but they cost the Suns more than the $100 million in luxury tax penalties this season. The Suns, as is, have $218 million in salary next season, and that includes non-guaranteed players Nick Richards and Cody Martin. They have a club option on Vasa Micic. Being under repeater tax, Phoenix is projected to pay $165 million in luxury tax next season. That's more than what they are paying this season. The Suns could waive Micic and Martin and sign two vet minimum guys, saving them $80 or $90 million in luxury tax. Phoenix acquired Micic and Martin from Charlotte in trading Yusuf Nurkić before the deadline. Martin has not played for the Suns this season. Moving Durant screams rebuild, something that goes against Ishbia's championship-at-all-cost mindset. So the Suns could look to obtain two rotational players combining to make right around the $54.7 million that Durant is due next season to avoid a rebuild, and maybe acquire a draft pick or two. NBA writer Sam Amico of Wirehoops wrote this, quote, you could trade Durant for some expiring contracts to get out of the apron, but that won't be so easy. He likely only has a few other places that he would be willing to go, unquote. Golliver sees the Dallas Mavericks as a potential trade partner for Durant, involving Daniel Gafford or P.J. Washington and whatever draft picks they have left, and then look to move Beal to the Philadelphia 76ers for Paul George, pending Beal removing his trade clause. Golliver said, quote, the resulting team still wouldn't be good enough to compete, but at least its veteran pieces would fit together better on paper. Mike Budenholzer was paid handsomely to win now rather than oversee a rebuild, so this plan would theoretically work from a coaching standpoint as well, at least for a year or two. That is, if the Suns decide to keep Budenholzer, who signed a 5-year deal for $50-plus million. USA Today NBA writer Jeff Zilgit said, given that the Suns have gone from Monty Williams to Frank Vogel to Mike Budenholzer in successive seasons, why not a fourth coach in 4 seasons? Budenholzer's track record is solid. He didn't put together this roster. He is not the issue. If the Suns went in another direction with front office leadership, that makes Budenholzer's future less stable, unquote. And then there's the oh wow option with Durant. The Suns needed an ideal landing spot for Beal to have him remove his no-trade to acquire Jimmy Butler, but to no avail. They desperately wanted to pair the former Miami Heat star with Booker and Durant. Considering they had such a high interest in Butler, and the Warriors still having enough of a love for Durant to pursue him, a league source floated an idea to the Republic, having the Suns trade Durant for Butler in the summer. Butler signed a 2-year, $121 million extension through the 26-27 season after declining a player option for the 25-26 season. The Suns would remain over the second apron, but finally land the player they have pursued for weeks. And those are trading options, but standing pat for next season doesn't appear to be an alternative action. NBA TV analyst Greg Anthony said, quote, I can't imagine they would run it back as constructed. What they do depends on what direction ownership wants to go. Do you want to rebuild, tweak, or retool? Unquote. So how about Booker? Well, sources informed the Republic the Suns could probably get 4 first-round picks for Booker and a rising star in his 3rd or 4th year. Booker has 0 options on his 4-year, $220 million Supermax that will have 3 years remaining after this season. But Booker has stayed 10 with the Suns through the good and the bad. Anyone is tradable, as evidenced by the Mavs moving Luka Doncic last month, but the Suns and Booker will remain joined at the hip, unless the franchise all-time leading scorer wanted out. And that's the article from the cover story by Dwayne Rankin, Suns Setting on Durant Era in Phoenix? Our next article is entitled McIlroy Talks PGA Tour LIV Deal. This is all about golf, by Tom DeAngelo for the Palm Beach Post, out of Orlando, Florida. PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan and world-ranked number 3 Corey McIlroy sent mixed signals the past 2 days about the progress of talks between the tour and LIV Golf, about 24 hours after Monahan attempted to put a positive spin on his second White House meeting with President Donald Trump. McIlroy might have revealed the true state of golf's attempt at reunification, in which Saudi Arabia's public investment fund, which is what finances LIV, that they would pump $1.5 billion into the tour's for-profit entity, PGA Tour Enterprises, if a deal is reached. McIlroy admitted Wednesday, quote, "The landscape looks a little different than 3 weeks ago when he spoke at Torrey Pines." Well, how different? McIlroy said, quote, "I don't think the PGA Tour needs a deal. That's more than a little," unquote. And that is the most honest take on the situation as we continue to sift through the spin from both sides and the White House, whose occupant is waiting to take a victory lap, claiming that he saved golf if a deal is ever brokered. Here is what McIlroy said later in his media availability, a day ahead of the start of the Arnold Palmer Invitational. He said, quote, "I think it takes two to tango. So if one party is willing and ready, and the other isn't, it sort of makes it rough," unquote. And then he added about a possible deal, quote, "I don't think it's ever felt that close, but it doesn't feel like it's getting any closer," unquote. So clearly, this is just shot at the PIF, which now seems to be the side that could be holding up any possible deal. One day earlier, Monahan had downplayed a question about his tone following the second meeting with Trump, which also included player directors Adam Scott and Tiger Woods. Monahan called the February 4th meeting a very productive visit, and he said, "It ultimately gets us one step closer to a deal being done." Well, the commissioner then described the February 20th meeting as a constructive working session, and having initiated a discussion about the reunification of golf. So, from very productive to constructive, and one in which discussions were initiated? Well, that's clearly signs that the talks have regressed, and yet Monahan insisted his confidence level in a deal has not diminished. On Tuesday, he said, quote, "I think anything that I've said is consistent with what should be said when you're in the middle of a complex discussion to try and reunify the game of golf. It doesn't speak to my confidence level. It speaks to the moment," unquote. McIlroy's stance on LIV has completely changed since the early days of the league launched by now ousted Commissioner Greg Norman. Lately, he's been clear on his desire for the two rivals to unite for the good of golf, and even played a round of golf with Trump in January. And McIlroy's optimism was brimming the day Trump was elected president in November, saying that he believed Trump returning to the White House, quote, "clears the way a little bit," unquote, for a deal. And Trump was quick with the promises, as he always is, saying on a podcast that he believes it would take him, oh, the better part of 15 minutes to get a deal done. Well, as the first group of golfers was teeing off Thursday at Bay Hill, more than 63,000 minutes have passed since Trump's declaration, and that's after two meetings with PGA Tour officials, the last at which Yasser Al-Rumayyan, the head of the PIF, was present. As negotiations entered their 22nd month, most believe this deal eventually will get done. Perhaps even McIlroy, who also said Wednesday, quote, "I think the narrative around golf, I wouldn't say needs a deal, I think the narrative around golf would welcome a deal in terms of just having all the best players together again," unquote. And at the moment, the gulf between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf appears to have widened. But give it a minute, or 15 minutes, if you believe the president. And that was the article, McIlroy Talks PGA Tour LIV Deal. Well, before we leave this section of the paper, we need to get in some high school sports. How about Central wins first 5A crown, written by Richard Obert for the Arizona Republic. On Friday, Central High School, 73 points. Sandra Day O'Connor High School, 67 points. Phoenix Central basketball players were upbeat coming out of the 32-team open division after their 73-67 first-round loss to number 5-ranked Phoenix Sandra Day O'Connor as the 28th seed. They knew what was ahead after taking one of the biggest and best teams in Arizona to the brink. With a second lease on basketball life, they were ready to roll through the 5A bracket. Behind the brothers, John and Grant Mattingly, Central went on a 12-0 run to start the second quarter and held off Phoenix Mountain Point in a 69-58 victory Friday night at Veterans Memorial Coliseum for the school's first 5A state title. This was Central's first championship game appearance since the school opened in 1957. Afterward, the emotional coach, Darren Bustos, in his 21st year leading the program, fought back tears when asked what it meant to finally hold the gold ball. Quote, "It's all about the community. At Central, I put a lot of time into it. We finally got a good group. We've had some good groups, but this one was just special," unquote. In 2010, Joseph Bustos, who was a cousin to Darren Bustos, he led Phoenix North to the 5A Division I title. The next season, Levine's Betty Fairfax High School captured the 5A level Division II crown. Those were the last two Phoenix Union High School District teams to win state until now with Central. The Bobcats, whose record was 28-3, were a decent team in the first half of the season, with freshman guard Grant Mattingly leading them. But after John became eligible, along with Dominic Rojas and Anthony Maciel, in early January, after having to sit out due to the AIA transfer rule, everything clicked. It became one of the most entertaining teams in the state to watch, bringing a res ball style of play, fast and furious with lots of ball movement. The Mattingly brothers grew up playing as kids on the Navajo Reservation near Winslow. Their only loss since January 1st was to O'Connor High School in the open. But in Friday's championship game, they had to overcome a rare off shooting night by John Mattingly, the junior guard who helped Phoenix Sunnyslope 2 years ago as a freshman reach the AIA's first open division final. He ended up leading the Bobcats with 21 points, making 10 of 12 free throws while making 5 of 21 field goal attempts. He also had 6 assists and 2 steals. When he finally nailed his first three-pointer with 4 minutes and 58 seconds left to play, it gave his team a 57-47 lead. Mattingly said, quote, "I just told the guys, that's on me, I'll make it up," unquote. Well, he did. He made 6 of 6 free throws in the final 1 minute and 27 seconds after the Pride closed to within 61-56. Grant Mattingly, a dazzling freshman guard, had 15 points of his 17 points in the first half when the Bobcats led by as many as 19 points. And that was the article by Richard Obert, Central High School Wins First 5A Crown. At 33 minutes past the hour, it's time for us to read some opinion pieces. Our first opinion piece is written by Phil Boas, who's a columnist for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, TSMC is Poised to Forever Change Arizona. Are we ready? Here's what he wrote. Major events that have disrupted the world may very well soon transform Arizona into an essential player in the evolving North American tech economy. President Donald Trump announced on Monday that Taiwan Semiconductor Manufacturing Company, TSMC, perhaps the most important corporation in the world, is about to make an additional $100 billion investment in microchip R&D and manufacturing in the United States, with much of it in Arizona. Already, the company has committed some $65 billion to construct 3 fabrication plants in the Grand Canyon state, drawing on billions of government dollars from the Bipartisan Chips and Science Act. But now, TSMC is announcing that it will build 3 new chip plants and a research and development center and 2 chip packaging plants in Arizona. Now, even before this latest piece of news, the company's investment represented the largest foreign direct investment in Arizona history and one of the largest in American history. And add to that now three new rockets of economic growth in this state, and TSMC will be investing $165 billion to build microchips in America and to keep U.S. manufacturers equipped with them. Microchips are the data processing brains and components that power modern machines, appliances, automobiles, aircrafts, and tanks. TSMC develops some of the most advanced microprocessors in the world. They've been so successful that they have cornered 90% of the global market on advanced chips. Now, that became an urgent concern when COVID-19 struck in 2020 and supply lines seized in the Asian Pacific, cutting off American manufacturers from advanced chips necessary to build their products. And that included weapons and delivery systems that compromise our arsenal of democracy. Add to that China's growing threat to Taiwan, where many of these chips were manufactured. And it soon became an urgent federal priority to bring more microchip manufacturing to American shores. Congress worked to bring the microchip industry home with the CHIPS Act that would invest billions to prime the pump for greater chip manufacturing. U.S. Senators Kyrsten Sinema and Mark Kelly of Arizona were chief architects and negotiators of that legislation. But there is a catch, however, to all of this good news. Monday's announcement comes at a time of growing uncertainty and fear about the American economy, world markets, and even long-standing alliances with our closest friends. Trump's disruptive style of governance is scaring investors and business people and world leaders. Also Monday, Trump announced he was throwing down 25% tariffs on Mexico and Canada, our largest trading partners, in what is certain to set off a destructive trade war. In reaction, the U.S. stocks tumbled to their lowest point this year, with the S&P 500 falling 1.8% and the NASDAQ tumbling 2.6%. Meanwhile, in Europe, our Western allies are wondering aloud if North America and Europe will remain allies in defending the free world after the eruption of bad feelings in the Oval Office between Trump, his Vice President J.D. Vance, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. As noted, disruption can create opportunity, as the pandemic and Chinese threat to Taiwan has for Arizona's economy, but it can also upend the best-laid plans of Taiwanese investors and American economic planners. If China one day soon decides to blockade or invade Taiwan, it could spark a global recession and dry up manufacturing and the demand for microchips. Smaller slowdowns have already created delays for the TSMC in Arizona, but a global recession would cut down hard on manufacturing. Nothing is a given. If the fates agree, however, and these plans move forward, all of us in Arizona will need to begin thinking about this state in new ways. A behemoth like the TSMC brings with it scores of other manufacturers and other factories that want to be nearby. In fact, that's already begun. As the Arizona Republic's Russ Wiles points out among many examples, he wrote, quote, Apple, TSMC's largest customer and the most valuable corporation in the world, would invest $500 billion in new American manufacturing in coming years, with Arizona a focal point for that too, unquote. It means that Arizona economic, political, and education leaders will need to be on their A game to deliver labor, housing, infrastructure, water, power, and 1,000 other needs. It means that this state will be brimming with opportunity for anyone with the imagination and pluck to seize it. And that was Phil Boas' opinion piece, TMC is poised to forever change Arizona. Are we ready? Our second opinion piece is Your Turn. It's got written by two different people. I'll tell you who they are in just a minute. But it's entitled, Arizona Drinking Water, is about to change for the better. Climate patterns across the Southwest are trending toward longer and hotter seasons with less snowpack to the north. The result is less runoff to support the Colorado River, which supplies about 36% of Arizona's water. Arizona has the second largest allocation of Colorado River water, but it receives the lowest priority for this allocation. That means we stand to lose the most if allocations are further reduced. Groundwater can temporarily offset shortages, but it must be managed carefully for long-term reliance. Many rural areas of the state are seeing steep declines in aquifer water levels. However, thanks to conservation measures and active management of groundwater resources, Arizona's water use has declined since the 1950s, despite our population's growth. We have also acted to reduce the impacts of drought, but we need every available tool to ensure our long-term water security. The Arizona Department of Environmental Quality earned approval this week for rules to implement Advanced Water Purification, AWP, marking a new era for water reliability in our arid state. AWP presents an opportunity to create a new, safe, and reliable source of drinking water to help meet the needs of Arizona residents and businesses. The new rules create a voluntary program for water agencies of all sizes to increase local water supplies and rely less on imported water from the Colorado River and local groundwater. In fact, several Arizona cities are well underway with plans for AWP. Scottsdale has been operating an AWP demonstration facility since 1998 and obtained the first permit in the state for small-scale demonstration of AWP for consumption as drinking water. The City of Phoenix is constructing one of several planned projects with the rehabilitation of its Cave Creek Water Reclamation Plant, which will feature a full-scale AWP facility. Tucson is in the planning phases for their program. Now, this proven technology takes recycled water, which is already clean enough to use in the environment for irrigation, and sends it through a high-pressure, multi-barrier filtration system that purifies water to a level that meets and exceeds state and federal drinking water standards. This purified water is so clean that it can be added to a community's water supply after rigorous monitoring and testing. Now, Arizona is not alone in this in its pursuit of AWP. Communities across the country have implemented similar rules, including Texas, Colorado, California, and Florida. El Paso Water recently broke ground on its Pure Water Center that will eventually produce 10 million gallons per day of purified water. The city of Aurora, Colorado, has been operating its purified water system for more than a decade, and Castle Rock, Colorado, operates a facility that it hopes will provide all of their water by 2065. Los Angeles is constructing a water recycling facility in the San Fernando Valley that will produce drinking water for about 250,000 people. Florida's Clay County is operating a demonstration facility to showcase the technology. Reusing wastewater in Arizona for beneficial uses is not new. Arizona has been practicing water reuse since 1926, when the first wastewater treatment plant built specifically for reuse was constructed at Grand Canyon Village. And now we use recycled water to cool the nation's largest nuclear power plant, replenish our aquifers, keep dozens of golf courses green, create public open spaces and wildlife habitat with wetlands, and supply one of the world's largest fountains. Decades of research, water quality monitoring, practical application of water treatment technologies, and specialized training and certification for water facility operators have all paved the way for AWP to provide our state with a high-quality and renewable source of water. Arizona's new rules for its use to protect public health and the environment, and it will create new opportunities for water supply resilience. We are eager to see them move forward. And that was the opinion piece, Arizona Drinking Water is About to Change for the Better. And it was written by two people, Aaron Young, who is the Flagstaff's Water Resource Section Director and President of Water Reuse Arizona, which is a water recycling trade association, and was also written by Rob McCandless, past president of that association. And that was the opinion piece, Arizona Drinking Water is About to Change for the Better. We just passed 45 minutes past the hour, so we're going to have to move on over to the entertainment section. We begin by reading today's horoscopes. And we will begin with a sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Are you taking one last trip down memory lane? Honor the past and let it go. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, the moon's connection to Saturn is fortifying, granting grit to get you over a hurdle. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, are you getting your priorities straight? Keeping a cool head earns you results. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd, are you making it personal? Because this approach may work in your favor. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd. The moon's connection to Saturn offers a beautiful opportunity for self-examination and healing. For you fellow Virgos out there with birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, are you building a strong bond? A friendly exchange reinforces trust. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, are you gaining overdue recognition? Colleagues turn to you for your expertise. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, are you committing to your creative potential? The moon's connection to Saturn asks you to take your passions seriously. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, are you handling a sensitive issue? A family matter requires your attention. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th birth dates, are you letting someone know your intentions? A contract becomes a serious matter. For Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates, put your heart into your work. Your effort will pay off. And finally, Pisces, February 19th to March 20th. Others need your support. You have been in their shoes. Act as someone's rock. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. The first letter goes, Dear Abby, we lost our 16-year-old daughter 2 years ago to leukemia. It's been a difficult 2 years. I am writing to ask if there are rules of etiquette for visiting a loved one at the cemetery. We go regularly. I decorate the area in front of her stone with holiday or seasonally appropriate decorations. Other family members and friends visit as well, and most leave little trinkets or fresh flowers that I pick up and throw away when they wither, or bring home and put in our daughter's room. My problem is one family member opens cards that have been left there for my daughter and puts all sorts of cheap decorations around her grave. Recently, they put decorations directly on her gravestone, which left large stains. We are now left searching for a professional to remove them, or her stone will need to be replaced. I'm beside myself. This is where I go to talk to my daughter to feel closer to her. It took a year for her stone to be set. I took my time choosing just the right etchings and picture, and it's a stone befitting our beautiful angel. Would it be wrong to set rules as to what people can and cannot leave when visiting my daughter's final resting place? Can I tell someone they are no longer welcome to visit? Signed, Protective in Pennsylvania. Dear Protective, please accept my deepest sympathy for the loss of your daughter. I hope the relative who damaged her headstone apologized for it and volunteered to pay for the services of the professional cleaner. If not, you should suggest it. And while you are at it, you can also explain what kind of mementos you feel are appropriate at the gravesite. But understand, however, that while you have the right to state your preferences, unless there is a guard watching your daughter's final resting place, there is no guarantee they will be respected. Our next letter goes, Dear Abby, we all meet acquaintances and say, let's grab dinner. Well, we intend to follow through, but we forget. A while back, my wife and I made a list of 10 other couples that we would like to get to know better and organized a group dinner. On the third Saturday of each month, a couple hosts the group at a restaurant. We don't meet in homes or in December. And yes, sometimes only 6 couples attend, but it's often all of us. This is our 25th year. We have not missed a month. During COVID, we gathered by Zoom. It's not about the food. It's about a caring group of friends sharing with each other. Abby, I thought you might want to print this to inspire others. Signed, One Host in Indiana. And Abby responds, Dear host, I think the lesson here is that someone has to be proactive and actually make plans rather than settle for good intentions. You did everyone, including yourself, a tremendous favor. Loneliness and isolation are serious problems for many. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren, who's also known as Jean Phillips. Her mom, Pauline Phillips, is the one who founded the column. And you can contact Abigail two ways. You can either go to her website, www.dearabby.com, or you can write her a letter and mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90069. And those were the letters of advice for Abigail Van Buren. We have time for a couple of comics. Let's see what's cooking. In the comic strip Beetle Bailey, that's drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker, in the first frame, Beetle is standing by a Jeep, and there's a toolbox on the ground, and here comes Sergeant Snorkel. And Beetle says, Your Jeep is all tuned up and ready to go. I have replaced the brake pads, rotated the tires, checked your fluids, and inspected the suspension. And in the last frame, Sergeant Snorkel looks at the cooler on the back of the Jeep and says, You forgot to restock the cooler. And Beetle says, I'm a mechanic, not a caterer. And that was Beetle Bailey. And in the comic strip Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall, in the first frame, Dagwood is running, carrying his briefcase, he's got his coat on, he's got some papers in his hand. He runs through the door. He says, I overslept again. Has he been looking for me? And there's two guys there, I guess he works with them, and they're standing next to a chair on wheels, and they says, I don't think so, Dag. Hop in this chair and hang on. And in the next frame, they're running down the hall, pushing the chair with Dagwood in it, and the guys say, We got this, Dag. Nothing to worry about. And Dag says, Well, I need to get this contract to him right away. And as in the third frame, they've approached the door, and they say, You're on, Dag. And then they give him a big shove right into Mr. Jither's office. And he goes, Boss, I have the Bigelow contract finished for your meeting. And Mr. Jither's turns and looks at him and says, The Bigelow contract? Oh, I changed my mind about working with Bigelow. Dagwood puts his feet down and screeches to a stop. And in the last frame, Dagwood's back at his desk. He's still sitting in the chair with the wheels on. He's still got his coat on. And his two fellow office workers say, "Hey, you're back early?" And the other one says, "Wow, he must have loved it." But, you know, Dagwood looks kind of perplexed. Anyway, that was Blondie. And in the comic strip Peanuts, drawn by Charles Schulz, here comes Charlie Brown walking up towards Snoopy, and Charlie says, "Hi, old friend." And he sits down on the ground facing Snoopy, and he says, "It's nice to have your own dog to talk to. A dog doesn't try to give you a lot of advice. He just listens. Most of the time, that's what a person wants, someone who will listen and not try to give you advice. Most of the time, you just want to talk, which is why a dog is the perfect one to..." And all of a sudden, Snoopy yawns really big. And then Charlie Brown says, "On the other hand..." And that was Peanuts. Well, in the time we have left, we ought to wish happy birthday to some celebrities. Who's having a birthday? Well, congratulations to guitarist Robin Trower. He was in the group Procol Harum. He turns 80. The drummer Jeffrey Osborne in the group LTD turns 77. Pianist and conductor Howard Shelley turns 75. Drummer Shannon Leto with 30 Seconds to Mars turns 55. Actor Emmanuel Lewis turns 54. Oh, you have to be a certain age to know what part he played. Actress Jean Louise Kelly turns 53. And guitarist Chad Gilbert with Newfound Glory turns 44. And then rapper and producer Suga from BTS turns 32. And the other rapper, Chica, turns 28. Congratulations, happy birthday. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, March 9th, 2025. Have a great day. Bye-bye.